You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
Good morning, friend. Welcome into the Mike Allen Show here on this Monday, October 17th. Take heart. Even though it's a Monday, the love and power of God are as real today as they were at the foot of the cross at Calvary when the Israelites were delivered out of Pharaoh's hand. God's love endures forever, and that should be an encouragement to you as you begin and understand whatever you face this week. God's grace is sufficient. That's the hope, that's the prayer, and that's the confidence we can have in our Lord. So anyway, my pleasure to be with you this morning. Looking forward to a couple of hours of perusing through a variety of different topics all through the lens of the Catholic faith. No official guest today, so you could be the guest if you want to call up. Something on your mind, 573-4-BREAD-4. 573-4-BREAD-4. You can email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com. As I said, today's feast day, St. Ignatius of Antioch, bishop and martyr. We'll talk a little bit about him today and why we need martyr bishops, to be quite honest. Also, Ken Bone, star from the second presidential debate, and the dangers of, to use a Latin phrase, santo subito. Also, why the Bible needs the church and vice versa. A tweak to strengthen a pro-life homily that's been shared a lot throughout this election season. Priest from Arizona. The blessing of Michelle Obama's outrage and her inconsistency and the Pastafarian's ironic compliment. So all that coming up on the program today. And certainly, as I said, if you want to call and be a part of it, if you've got a thought or a comment, a question, maybe you've been listening for a while. Maybe you yourself are not Catholic, but you find yourself a little bit intrigued, but you still find yourself tripping over some things that you're not quite sure about. Well, I'd love to hear from you on that. Be happy to answer as best I can. 573-4-BREAD-4. I'm not an official apologist, nor did I sleep in a Holiday Inn Express last night, but I gave it my best shot. 573-4-BREAD-4, or you can email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com. Hope you had a good weekend. I had a pretty good one myself, trying to think through. Yesterday, prompted by an excellent movie review from Alyssa Wilkinson, who's been a guest on the program a number of times. You can check out her work at AlyssaWilkinson.com. She's written for Rolling Stone, Christianity Today, now writes for Vox. And she wrote a review of the film The Queen of Katwe, which is based on the true story of a young girl out of Kampala, Uganda, capital of Uganda, who discovers through a local ministry the game of chess and ends up becoming a master at it. It's a Disney film based on a true story. I get the sense is fairly accurate in its depiction. You need to see it. And really, it's, I would say, just about all ages you may think chess movie, that sounds energetic and inspired. Well, I mean, it actually is, believe it or not. Very, very well done. It'll bring a tear to your eye. Also make you appreciate what you have, for sure, and the resiliency of those throughout the world who are sustained on so much less than we can imagine that it takes to get through life. So check it out, The Queen of Katwe. So I got to see that yesterday. Saturday, what did I do? I did pretty much not a whole lot. My daughter sang in a concert downtown. I got to go enjoy that. But, I was really no football for me to watch yesterday other than checking out highlights because my Kentucky Wildcats did not play. And my Tampa Bay Buccaneers didn't play. They had an off week. So it was kind of nice for me because I knew that neither of my teams would lose. Both of them slight favorites over open date. And then Friday night had a lot of fun. Big rivalry game for our local Catholic high school. And they won big. And I got to call the PA. So that was pretty fun. So for the most part, pretty laid back weekend, which is not per usual, but I'll take it when I can get it. That's for sure. As I said, today's feast day, the feast day of Saint Ignatius of Antioch, both bishop and martyr. I really wish that I had Father Tom Galloway in here, who is an Orthodox priest who comes on once a month. I'm going to see if I can get him on either maybe tomorrow or later this week, because I'd love to get him to talk about Ignatius of Antioch, because Father Galloway himself is an Antiochian Orthodox priest. Antioch, one of the five, I guess you could say, original sees or dioceses of the Christian Church, I think, along with Rome, of course, Antioch, you had Alexandria, Jerusalem, and it'll come to me later, I'm sure. It is a Monday. You have to cut me a little bit of slack. But Ignatius of Antioch, who himself, born, I think, around 35 A.D., martyred sometime between the years of 107 and 110 by order of Trajan. One of the records we have of Ignatius of Antioch actually are comprised of some epistles or letters that he wrote and distributed on his way to Rome from Antioch, where he would face wild beasts. Along the way, he even had the opportunity to meet in Smyrna with St. Polycarp. Polycarp, who was, I think, about 30 or 40 years Ignatius of Antioch's junior, who would also become a bishop and a martyr for the church. And one of the beautiful things, as I said, that we have are these epistles or these letters that St. Ignatius wrote as he journeyed really with eyes wide open toward Rome and what he knew was his certain death there. Now, I always think it's fascinating to read what we call the early church fathers. These are the persons who go back just a generation or two removed from the original apostles. It's so easy for us to sometimes elevate the apostles almost into the realm of mythology, as though they live in some different world and time than the rest of human experience. But when we encounter the fathers of the church, these who were either disciples of the original disciples or disciples of their disciples, or maybe disciples of their disciples of their disciples, but you know what I mean. We begin to see and connect the dots of our historical connection with them in a way that maybe we don't usually think of it. And of course, one of the things we discover is the late blessed John Henry Newman said, to go deep in history is to cease to be Protestant, because you begin to discover just how Catholic many of these early church fathers, just a generation or two at most removed from the original disciples, sound. But here's a little bit of St. Ignatius of Antioch's letter to the Christians in Rome, knowing that he would face martyrdom in the early second century. Ignatius of Antioch, who was the third bishop, I believe, of Antioch, after St. Peter, and then I believe Evodius, and then St. Ignatius. But St. Ignatius would have known well the Apostle John, again, as I said, having been born about 35 A.D., I think John died somewhere in the 90s A.D. Anyway, he says this to the Christians in Rome. My prayer to God has been heard, and I've been permitted to see your holy faces, so that I've been granted even more than I was asking. For in bonds, in Jesus Christ, I hope to salute you, if it be God's will that I should be accounted worthy to reach the end. He says, grant me just this privilege of being poured out as an offering to God while the altar is now prepared, and do you as a choir of love sing praises to the Father in Christ Jesus, that he has counted the bishop of Syria worthy to be brought from the land of the sunrise to the sunset. It is good to be setting to the world for God, that I may rise to him. And then St. Ignatius says this, I write to all the churches and charge them all to know that I die willingly for God. if only you do not hinder. Suffer me to become the food of wild beasts, through whom I may attain to God. I am God's grain, he says, and I am ground by the teeth of wild beasts, that I may be found the pure bread of Christ. Rather entice the wild beasts to become my tomb and to leave no trace of my body, that when I have fallen asleep, I may not be a burden to anyone. Then I shall truly be a disciple of Christ, when the world shall not see even my body. Entreat the Lord for me, that by these instruments I may be found a sacrifice to God. Profound Eucharistic imagery in Ignatius of Antioch as he prepares for his martyrdom in such a brutal fashion. It's an indication of why, and we may talk a little bit more about this in the second hour, we need bishop martyrs. Unfortunately, you know, over the life of the church, I mean, there are historical accounts, of course, of many bishops who stood with great constancy and courage in the face of persecution. Unfortunately, there are also accounts of bishops who, in order to save their own tail, were willing to compromise. As a friend of mine points out, the reason John Fisher, during the time of Henry VIII as a bishop, was a martyr was because he was virtual, and why he stands out, he was virtually the only bishop who stood against Henry VIII's despicable plot to divide the church. More on this in the second hour of why we need bishop martyrs. We'll also give you the question of the day when we come back. This is the Mike Allen Show. You're listening to Breadbox Media.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
Minutes past the hour. You're back on the Mike Allen Show here on this Monday, October 17th, feast day of St. Ignatius of Antioch, bishop and martyr. St. Ignatius, pray for us. 573-4-BREAD-4 if you want to call up. Came up with a question of the day today. It relates to Winnie the Pooh. Friday was the 90th anniversary of the publication of A.A. Milne's classic, Winnie the Pooh. And so I'm asking this question, which Winnie the Pooh character most resembles your personality? You know, is it Winnie himself? Is it Tigger? Is it Eeyore, Rabbit, Owl, Piglet, Christopher Robin? Love to hear from you. 573-4-BREAD-4, 573-4-BREAD-4, or you could email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com. Sometime maybe during a break, I came across a BuzzFeed. You know, you have these things that go around. Which Winnie the Pooh character are you? So I'll take this and tell you a little bit later what it turns out for me, and then maybe I'll post a link to the actual quiz on your on the Facebook page. And you could see. But this could be kind of fun. I think Leo, who is our general manager here, who has, of course, his the almost hour, the Leo Brown almost hour, on my comments here, which you can do. You can always comment on Facebook, Mike Allen Show, the handle on Facebook or Twitter. Or you can email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com, or you can post a thought. Or you can give us a call or text at 573-4-BREAD-4. Leo says, which one is most choleric and neurotic? Rabbit, maybe. That's good. Yeah, I'd say that applies to Rabbit. So anyway, we'd love to hear from you. You want to know a little bit more about what we're doing, go to breadboxmedia.com. One of the real, I think, cool opportunities that we have are the development of what we call parish streams, and that is your local Catholic parish can have its own Breadbox Media stream or station, which you get all the same programming morning, noon, and night from every corner of this country, as well as across the great heartland, different personalities, different temperaments, all through the lens of the Catholic faith. If you want to learn more about the different shows and the programming schedule, go to breadboxmedia.com. But what's cool is that your parish can therefore customize the 3-minute commercial breaks, and really they get some say too. If they want to produce their own programming, that can be done as well. But particularly the commercial breaks, they can have parish announcements, they can have parish commercials from advertisers that may be on the back of the bulletin, for example. And it's a great way to raise revenue for your parish, as well as to provide a communication hub of sorts and a hub for catechesis and teaching and spiritual formation all through the stream. And with the apps that you can download for your digital devices, everybody in the parish, at least everybody who's got a smartphone, which is the majority of people today, you can carry it around in their pocket. So it's a really good opportunity. Check it out at breadboxmedia.com. Big sports weekend, of course, football. Again, starting to work our way through the college football landscape in terms of who's going to make the playoff at the end of the season. And the undefeated teams that are left, let me scroll down here. I see big win for Ohio State in overtime. There are actually two teams that came close to finding themselves perhaps on the outside looking in. Though I would argue that even if Ohio State had dropped that game to Wisconsin, they had an opportunity later on beating Michigan to get back into the playoff again. But they came back, Wisconsin there playing at Camp Randall Stadium, almost pulling the upset, going to OT, Ohio State winning. But the big beneficiary was Clemson. Clemson getting a missed field goal from NC State to bring them back from the brink of disaster and win in overtime. NC State's having a nice little season. They upset Notre Dame in hurricane-type weather, but dropped that game to Clemson. The probably the saddest team for that happening was Louisville, who needs an incredible amount of help from Clemson in order to get back into the picture again. Nebraska, probably the most surprising undefeated team, still sitting out there at 6-0. Baylor also undefeated, winning big. Alabama's Alabama. Mercy what they did to a good Tennessee team in Knoxville. Boggles the imagination and has some people actually considering this team from Nick Saban perhaps his best team ever. Let's see, Boise State staying undefeated. They have no shot at a playoff, that I don't think. And let me see from down from there. Of course, Michigan, I believe, was off this weekend. They continue. I think they've moved up now above Clemson in the rankings to number 2. So certainly right now you got to say Alabama, Michigan, Clemson, and Ohio State, and Washington, I guess, would be the other one. You got to figure Ohio State and Michigan are going to have a quasi-playoff in their final regular season game against each other. And, of course, Texas A&M looming out there as well, undefeated. They still have to play Alabama. NFL-wise, it's amazing what difference a year can make for two teams in particular. Thinking about the Carolina Panthers. The Carolina Panthers, who at this point last year was undefeated and would not lose a game until after Christmas. Now they find themselves sitting at 1-5 after getting beaten by a pretty mediocre Saints ball club. I guess the Saints, though, as long as you've got Drew Brees, you've got a chance. And then the other one is the Cincinnati Bengals, who started off 8-0 last year, before going on to the playoffs and losing, as they tend to do under Marvin Lewis. But again, Bengals fans, you kind of got to pick your poison, kind of like the Cincinnati Reds did. They're complaining it's Dusty Baker. He loses in the playoffs. Well, believe me, as a Tampa Bay Buccaneer fan, if I had a coach whose main problem was losing in the playoffs, I could live with it. But playoffs, now, if you're a Bengals fan, you're going to sound a little bit like Jim Mora. Playoffs? Playoffs? I just want to win a game. And going to Foxborough, not the best way to do that. New England flexing their muscles in the now Brady-led team with a big win. The big other big question sort of looming over the NFL right now, oh, by the way, what about the Buffalo Bills? With a almost 30-point win against the Niners, Buffalo, I think, started off 0-2, now 4-2. And rolling, whereas the Denver Broncos, who started 4-0, are now 4-2 and struggling. Anyway, but the big news is, or the big question is, what's going to happen when Tony Romo comes back? Because the Dallas Cowboys, who had had early season success, but I'd say admittedly against a fairly soft schedule, goes up to Lambeau Field and dominates the Packers, led by rookie quarterback Dak Prescott. I saw a lot of Dak Prescott as a Kentucky football fan when he was throwing for Mississippi State, and quite frankly, I'm glad to see him out of the maroon and white. But it's created a little bit of conundrum. I was talking to a couple of Cowboy fans yesterday after Mass, and they were talking about how, every Cowboy fan I've talked to, with all due respect to Mr. Romo, says we need to keep Dak under center. Not a great name, Dak. Anyway, too bad his name isn't Gak, like Todd Gak from the old Seinfeld episode. Dak Gak, that would sell. But almost unanimous Cowboys fans say they want Dak Prescott to remain the starter. And as I told my friends, and I like to gig them a little bit because I don't like the Cowboys, I said, oh, you know that there's an old principle that you can't lose your starting position because of an injury. And they said, tell that to Drew Bledsoe. Well, point taken. Drew Bledsoe, when the New England Patriots got hurt and a fellow named Tom Brady came in, and well, the rest is history. I guess you could also tell the same thing to, oh, mercy. Oh, who was the guy that decided to sit one day and Lou Gehrig took over at first base? He only played for another 2,130 games. It'll come to me. It's a Monday. Anyway, so that'll be the interesting dilemma. The Cowboys with a bye week, some time to think about it. Boy, do you mess with success? And then what do? Do you deal Romo? Boy, I don't know. Big questions all around. 573-4-BREAD-4 if you want to chime in on that. 573-4-BREAD-4, or you could email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com. Trying to see if there's any other big sports news. The Dodgers bouncing back last night with a 1-0 win at Wrigley. Clayton Kershaw, who has been a little bit spotty in terms of postseason performance, coming up big last night. Now they go to L.A. 1-1. Could be very interesting. Cubs fans, are you worried? We'll have to see how it plays out. Okay, let's go on to our What Were You Thinking nominees of the day. Never seems to be a shortage, especially over the weekend. Here we go. The headmaster of a Connecticut high school has apologized after its football team named one of its plays Hitler. Go dumb or go home, as we like to say. Chris Winters of Greenwich High School issued the apology Friday. Evidently, a mother from the town of Trumbull told the Connecticut Post her son's freshman football team was playing Greenwich on Thursday when the players charged onto the field shouting Hitler. Were they goose-stepping too? The newspaper reported the signal for the play was an index finger laid across the upper lip. Debbie Levison told the newspaper her son was angry when he came off the field and told her why. When she asked the coach, he confirmed that they use a play named Hitler. Well, the problem is Levison had grandparents, aunts, uncles, and cousins who perished at the hands of Hitler. So yes, she says, I'm outraged. Come on, coach, really? We'll be back with our other nominee and our winner. This is the Mike Allen Show. You're listening to Breadbox Media.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
Back
It is the bottom of the hour here on the Mike Allen Show.
Here on this Monday, the 17th, feast day of St. Ignatius of Antioch. St. Ignatius of Antioch, pray for us. As per usual, we at this time of the show, we make our nominees for the What Were You Thinking Award for the day. Recognizing, as Blaise Pascal once said, that where he talked about the grandeur and the misery of humanity. We are grand, made in the image and likeness of God. We've also fallen, not just in other ways, but also in our intellect. And so sometimes our misery comes from our lack of thinking. So go dumb or go home. At least in these occasions, we're not going to laugh at ourselves because we're not the ones doing the bonehead thing. But we've done it many times, let's be honest. Anyway, so we had our first nominee, the football team in Connecticut, that decided they would have a player called Hitler and have their players run out on the field with their finger over their lips, like a little mustache, I guess. Fortunately, representatives from the Connecticut Anti-Defamation League met with the football team and coaches on Friday to help explain to them why it was offensive. Steve Ginsburg said there was a lack of understanding, not a situation where there was any intent to intimidate or anti-Semitism or anything like that, okay? Just seriously, coach. Wow. Anyway, how about this? Hamilton County doesn't track ankle monitors after business hours, and criminals are taking advantage. A note to criminal offenders in Hamilton County: if you're going to cut off your ankle monitor, do it after business hours and on weekends. Evidently, from 6 p.m. to 8 a.m. on weekdays, no county corrections officials are tracking real-time information that GPS monitors collect on 24 people who mostly face misdemeanor charges. A computer sends updates 24/7, but no one's on the clock to view them. Same goes for the 109 people who wear older monitors that only measure how far someone is from a box that's plugged into a power socket. So, what? Way to go. Let all these ankle monitor people be aware that if they're outside business hours, then they can get a head start. And unbelievable. But our winner is going to be, let's see, this is really pretty unbelievable. If the next time you go in the hospital, make sure there's no one there with your same exact name. Massachusetts surgeon mistakenly removes healthy kidney from someone with same name as patient with the tumor. A surgeon at a Massachusetts hospital made this error, evidently. They found that the doctor at St. Vincent Hospital in Worcester failed to confirm the patient's identity before the medical mix-up in July. The doctor did examine a CT scan before surgery, which showed the tumor on the kidney. However, the scan was from the wrong patient. The mistake was not discovered until after tests were done on the kidney after it was removed. How would you have liked to therefore have been the one to explain to the patient that you got the body wrong? Wow. Wow. So let's check some things. So security numbers, middle initial, photo ID before we start doing surgery. That's a pretty big whoops there. If you've got one to send our way, 573-4BREAD-4, 573-4BREAD-4, or you can email me, mikeallenshow@gmail.com. As I said, always looking for nominees for the What Were You Thinking Award. I want to spend a little bit of time addressing an issue. As you've known, I've made very clear on this program before that I refuse to vote for either major party candidate for president. I cannot, in good conscience, vote for Hillary Clinton. Not only because of the multitude of corruption charges and evidence that she has really abused her power in many ways through her career in politics. I also have a big problem with, quite frankly, her husband's conduct. Yes, it's not her conduct per se, though I think that she has been pretty blind to that conduct, and having him around the Oval Office, I think, would be a travesty. But mainly it's because of her all-in support, aggressive support, advocacy for abortion at all stages and even to strip away the Hyde Amendment protections to keep tax dollars out of the abortion industry. It's just egregious to me. At the same time, Donald Trump is a narcissistic, misogynistic, I think in many ways, uninformed and clueless candidate on the other side, too. And I don't believe for a second that he really is pro-life. I cannot vote for someone who talks about abusive sexual behavior and calls it locker room banter. I just can't vote for Donald Trump either. But there is a certain segment I recognize of people out there who consider themselves pro-life, who want to see, who are yearning for, I think as so many of us are, a day in which the unborn are welcomed and recognized in their full personhood and their full unalienable right to life. And they somehow see in Donald Trump, when you compare the two candidates, they'll usually couch it with, oh, I know he's far from perfect. There are things that I can't stand about him too, yada, yada, yada. But in essence, the babies, or but the Supreme Court, that Donald Trump is going to support nominees for the Supreme Court or propose them that are more pro-life, more conservative than the liberal, secular persons that Hillary Clinton will propose for the judiciary. And that's the argument. And oftentimes, when you have people who've publicly, and I'm certainly not the only one, who have publicly, I saw that a friend of mine, a priest, had posted the same thing, his refusal to vote for either major party candidate. Oftentimes, there's a pretty immediate and quick backlash. Then you must want Hillary Clinton to win. That's kind of the mindset. If you're not going to vote for Donald Trump, then you might as well just go ahead and vote for Hillary Clinton, because your vote for someone who can't win, a third-party candidate, is a wasted vote. And oftentimes, not only is there a post of that sort or some sort of a reaction to that, oftentimes I've noticed on social media, there's the posting of this homily by Father John Markite of the Diocese of Phoenix, Arizona. Father Markite with an impassioned plea, and you can find these clips all over the internet, on YouTube, through EWTN and so forth, preaching a homily about the significance of abortion in the election, and that we should not in any way pretend that abortion is just one issue among many. And so he goes through this long thing about abortion and its significance. In the midst of that, and by the way, that's usually therefore posted as some sort of mic drop, step away, watch this homily, and you'll know you have to vote for Donald Trump. Well, my retort to that is if you listen to Father Markite's homily, it is, yes, a strong case against voting for a pro-abortion candidate. He doesn't name her, of course, but we all know we mean Hillary Clinton. And so this is, you know, the strong emphasis is not to vote for her, which certainly I can buy. But I don't see in any way how this homily somehow compels us to vote for Donald Trump. And here's a little critique that I want to make of this. It is a critique of something he says as he starts getting into this issue of abortion. Now, I'm very hesitant here, and I'm going to have to hold off, I think, until the next segment, because it's a fairly lengthy little clip that I want us to hear in just a minute on what Father Markite has to say as an aside. Before launching into this topic, as a word of tenderness and mercy to women in the congregation who may find themselves in great pain when he talks about this issue. I mean, I want to be very careful here, because I want to, on the one hand, really, I want to tip my cap to Father Markite and his willingness to take on a very difficult issue from the pulpit. We have far too many homilists, whether it be priests or deacons, who are so reticent about addressing an issue of some controversy for fear of alienating that their silence speaks volumes. And it really empowers a certain segment of Catholicism to want to brush away clear Catholic teaching since the foundation of the church on the proper moral view on an issue like abortion. We have far too much silence. That's one of the reasons I say here on this feast day of St. Ignatius of Antioch, while we need bishop martyrs, because we need shepherds in the church, we need those who, through their very lives and sacrifice, show that there is truth worth dying for, instead of truth that we're constantly seeking to couch under the veil of being pastoral. So I want to be very careful. I appreciate Father Markheit being willing to take on such a difficult issue. I simply don't agree with the conclusion being drawn from those who watch the homily and share it, that it compels me to vote for Donald Trump, because that's assuming that I believe Donald Trump is the pro-life candidate, which I think takes some serious logical gymnastics to believe. When we come back from the break, I'll play a little clip of this homily. One particular tweak, critique that I have of it that I think is worth talking about. So we'll be back in just a minute. This is the Mike Allen Show. You're listening to Breadbox Media.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
Fifteen minutes before the hour, you're back on the Mike Allen Show.
Pray for eternal rest for a young girl, Trinity Gay, 15 years old, the daughter of Olympian sprinter Tyson Gay, has a very local connection for where we broadcast from here in Lexington, Kentucky, Tyson Gay's hometown. His daughter was a runner, freshman runner at a local Catholic high school, a local public high school, Tyson Gay's alma mater of Lafayette High School here in Lexington, Kentucky, and she was killed by a stray bullet, a gunfight, I guess, in a parking lot at actually a restaurant that my family frequents quite regularly at 4 o'clock. Well, we're not usually there at 4 a.m. That's when it went down, at the Cookout restaurant here in Lexington. Just a horrible, tragic thing. Oh, my goodness. Precious life snuffed out through gun violence. And so pray for the eternal rest for her soul. We'll pray together, eternal rest grant unto her, O Lord, and let perpetual light shine upon her. May the souls of the faithful departed through the mercy of God rest in peace. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit, amen. Of course, pray for Tyson Gay and for the girl's mother and for all those who grieve her shocking death. Unbelievable. A lot of crime, it seems like, in Lexington, Kentucky, which has not been the case typically, it seems like, as of late. Very concerning, for sure. My question of the day, which Winnie the Pooh personality are you? Of the different characters, who best fits your personality? During the last break, I took this BuzzFeed online survey, and I got Owl was my character, my Winnie the Pooh character. So if you want to take it, go on there. I'd love to hear your results. I'm not sure I feel good about it. I mean, isn't Al kind of a blowhard? I mean, I guess if you're going to have a radio show, I guess you got to have a little bit of blowhard in you. But I'm not sure how I feel about that. According to BuzzFeed's survey, it says, people often view you as a mentor, probably because you're intelligent, mature, and chatty in a good way. I just think of Owl, my great uncle Robert. Anyway, sure, you could be a bit scatterbrained at times, but that's part of your charm and just one more reason why everyone loves you. Oh, now that's a positive spin. So anyway, would love to hear from you. 573-4-BREAD-4. Anyway, back to what I was talking about in the last segment, this homily from this priest in Phoenix, Arizona, Father John Markite, who I do not know. And his homily has been making the social media rounds, particularly being used, I think, by people, Catholics, who feel like there is an urgent obligation to vote for Donald Trump as the pro-life candidate in this race. Sure, he's imperfect. You know, sure, he uses naughty words, but he will is the only candidate who has surrounded himself with pro-life people, has claimed to be pro-life, and will appoint Supreme Court justices and all the rest. And oftentimes, as I said, they share this homily sort of as a mic drop moment. Watch this homily and tell me how you can vote anything other than Donald Trump. The problem is I've watched the homily. As I said, tip of the hat to Father Markite for taking on a very difficult and challenging topic from the ambo. A lot of priests, deacons, even some bishops shy away from dealing with difficult issues too often. Therefore, our people suffer from a lack of clarity and catechesis. So it's admirable what he does here. And I think he does make a strong case of why one should be very, very leery of voting for a candidate who is a strong advocate for abortion, as Hillary Clinton is. Yes, the argument has been made, and even by Cardinal Ratzinger, now Pope Emeritus Benedict, that it is possible in some instances to vote for a pro-choice candidate, pro-abortion candidate, as long as your support of them is not because of their support for abortion, and there are proportionate reasons why you can vote for them. And as Archbishop Charles Chaput has said, what's a proportionate reason? Well, he said it in the most stark of terms. It would be the sort of reason that you would be comfortable on your judgment day giving in the presence of the unborn who all perished because of legal abortion. If you would feel comfortable justifying your vote to them, then that's a proportionate reason. Anyway, so, but the thing I get with Father Markite is that it's his homily does not sound to me, I'm trying to figure it out, why it's an argument to vote for Donald Trump, who has, in so many ways, at least from my point of view, disqualified himself from being the so-called moral candidate. Because to be pro-life is not just to say you're anti-abortion. It's the dignity of the human person, which is the very foundational truth that opposition to abortion rests in. And he has been far from one who would affirm the dignity of every human person, and particularly his attitudes toward women, toward minorities and immigrants, and toward the sort of demagogic fomenting of the worst nativist strains in American history. I can't vote for him. But here, I want to play just a little clip, another little issue that I take with Father, with using Father Markite's homily as some sort of a standard. There's a point in the homily where Father Markite makes a little aside. He realizes he's getting ready to wade into painful territory. There are a lot of people. This is true. If you were in an average Catholic parish of any size and you were to say in a mass, everybody in here, every woman in here who's had an abortion, please stand up, you'd be shocked at the number of people who would stand up, of how common it is. And so he's trying to keep from coming off as too judgmental and harsh when he talks about this issue. And so he offers a word of tenderness, which is well-intentioned, but in my view doesn't go far enough. I'll play it right here for you. We got that there, Alex?
Now, before we go any further in discussing the extremely sensitive issue of abortion, I want to say a word to any woman in this congregation or anyone who is joining us on TV or radio who has chosen abortion. God's mercy is bigger than your sin and your pain. In 10 years of priesthood, I have often been blessed to be the one who gets to welcome back a woman to the merciful embrace of God the Father, to take her hand, put it back in the hand of God the Father. after she has admitted to and repented of her abortion in the sacrament of confession. A priest in such a situation has the privilege of assuring the woman that she has never for a single moment lost the love of God the Father, nor her dignity as a beloved daughter of that same God, no matter what she did. And so I say to these women today, you do not have to hide from God one moment longer. I know it's exhausting to pretend that your pain is not real, that your loss is not immense, and that your choice wasn't devastating to you. But when you experience God's love and mercy even after an abortion, you will really come to know and experience that God's love in forgiving our most serious sins is even greater than his love in creating us. Your Father has been waiting for you for a very long time, mothers. It's time to come home.
Now,
having shared that important word with grieving mothers, let's return to the subject of our duty as Catholics in the public square.
All right, so I understand the intent here. And it, like I said, I think it's very admirable. Obviously, you're getting ready to wade into difficult terrain. You're going to be giving a challenging word about the topic of abortion and why we cannot compromise on this issue in the public square. And so you're wanting to offer a word of tenderness, very sincere, very genuine. And everything he said there, of course, is true, that there's nothing we can do to make God love us any more or any less. And he welcomes us back no matter who we are and what we've done. My only issue with it is this. There's no mention of men. Think about that. There's no mention of men. Behind every abortion is a mother and a father. And women, yes, are the ones who have the procedure done, but oftentimes, not always, of course, but oftentimes, she is either facilitated in that, or perhaps at times feels like she does not have the support of the father and the child. It takes, as they say, it takes two to tango. And it bothers me a little bit in that homily that there's no mention of men who need to repent for their abdication of their paternal duty to the unborn child in their wife or girlfriend's womb. That, to me, hurts the homily significantly. Now, I'm not a woman, obviously, but I can't help but wonder if there isn't a sense in which there's a message from those who are passing this homily around that, you know, women, since abortion is your fault, you should be willing to put up with voting for a candidate who is hostile and objectifying and demeaning to women in order to have a law crack down on this female sin. I'm not saying that was Father Markite's intent. I think his intent was a very noble one, but I think we have to be very, very careful on this issue and recognize that abortion, there are a lot of complex factors, and men and women can share culpability. We'll be back with more. This is The Mike Allen Show.
Listening to Breadbox Media Podcasts. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.